Hi, hope everybody had a good lunch. I just wanted to thank the organizers of the conference for inviting me. I'm very honored to be here and very happy to see all of you here on this cold afternoon. And we just have a great group of speakers here. It's been wonderful so far, so very happy to get a chance to add to that. Well, I didn't expect to have so much discussion about mirror self-recognition, and you've saved me a lot of time, and I think we're all thinking in the same direction, so this is very exciting right now. What I want to do is I want to talk about mirrors as using as tools. Oops, can everybody hear me? As tools for studying the animal mind, and we are a narcissistic bunch. When we go back into history, it turns out that even since the ancient Egyptians, we have found ways of making reflective surfaces so we can take a look at ourselves. Some of us are very pleased with what we see. Others, I know when I look at myself the first thing in the morning, I'm like, oh. I shouldn't have done what I did last night, but we understand that that face in the mirror is ours, and that body in the mirror is ours. And I want to just clarify something, that when we think about mirror self-recognition, which is again what I'm going to be talking about, it's been used in many ways in an equivalent way with self-awareness. And that's not how I see it, and I just want to clarify my position on this one. First of all, I think self-awareness is not a unitary capacity. There are many kinds of self-awareness that organisms can show. So certainly an animal that is aware of itself in space, an animal is not bumping into other organisms, it's not bumping into walls, it has some sense of body awareness. We have an awareness of where our limbs are in space, our limbs relative to our bodies, so we have a proprioceptive self sense of awareness. And there are many, many other kinds of self-awareness that both cognitive psychologists, social psychologists, sociologists have studied. Your view of me colors my sense of self-awareness, self-esteem. So I just, from my point of view, self-awareness is not unitary. And mirror self-recognition, from my perspective, is simply one index of self-awareness. It's one particular type of self-awareness. So if an animal doesn't show mirror self-recognition, I certainly wouldn't feel comfortable saying it has no self-awareness. I don't think we have enough information to make that judgment call just on one test. So given that, I want to talk a little bit about self-awareness. And clearly it's the ability to recognize oneself in a mirror, but when you actually drill down, it really requires several steps that have different aspects of cognition or cognitive processes involved. So we are bombarded with information. If you have a mirror in front of you, you have to selectively attend to what's in that mirror out of all the other things you could attend to. And many animals, when they're confronted with mirrors, simply don't attend to the mirror. They don't pay attention to it at all. Other animals do attend, but never figure out it's themselves. So many species of birds, magpies excluded, as we heard, magpies have passed a mark test, attend to the mirror, but think it's another bird. Okay, other animals, like cats and dogs and several animals, may attend, but just walk away, or some animals don't attend at all, don't pay attention. We've looked at harbor seals, and they simply don't pay any attention to a mirror. They treat it just like any other non-reflective surface. Once an organism attends to the mirror, they have to interpret that information in a particular way to be able to figure out it's themselves in a mirror. So think about a mirror as containing potential information that's there for interpretation. And then finally, it requires not only the mental capacity to interpret information correctly, but the motivation to care enough to look at yourself and perhaps show outward evidence or behavior, which is what we can measure, because we can't get inside that black box, of being interested in yourself. So we have to look at for behavioral measures of self-directed behavior, and I'll explain that in a moment. So in children, mirror self-recognition emerges about 18 to 24 months of age. And of course, there are outliers on both sides, like with other cognitive capacities. And it's been suggested by many that MSR, that I'll call mirror self-recognition, I'll use that for short, may be inextricably linked with our ability, our proprioceptive feedback, the ability to understand that this is my art in space and where it is relative to myself. So you have to be able to have that kind of feedback. And social awareness. So for example, when Gordon Gallup did some earlier studies, can you hear me if I'm this far away? When Gordon Gallup did some of the earlier studies with chimpanzees, he found that chimps that had not been raised in social environments, that were raised in isolation, failed to show this ability. So the social rearing, the social upbringing, the overall sociality of an animal may have a great deal to do with this. And I think we haven't really explored this fully with other species yet. In humans, mere self-recognition emerges just about the time that you see the first signs of empathy in young children. So when children are first starting to show outward signs of self-awareness, paying attention to themselves in a mirror, they're also showing concern, or what we call empathy, for their caregivers. They might notice that mommy or daddy has a boo-boo and show concern. That beginning of what we talk about is theory of mind, theory of what it's like to be in another's place. And Gordon Gallup, who we've heard mentioned before, was really the first to hypothesize both an ontogenetic and phylogenetic link between the emergence of mirror self-recognition and empathy in theory of mind. So these capacities may be linked. I love this slide. This came out in the New Yorker in 2002. And what is this dog thinking? I mean, here's this dog. Is he looking at himself and thinking, bad dog? Or is he looking at another dog? And this is not easy stuff to figure out. When we look at other animals, we have to know a great deal about their abnormal behavior. We have to do a lot of control tests. When we're just watching what they do normally, we have to look at what happens when we put them in front of a non-reflective novel object, and then we put them in front of a reflective object. And even then, it's often very hard to discern, do they know it's themselves in a mirror? So the question becomes for me, and what I've been very interested in, is the question of how about non-human faces in a mirror? Do other animals share this sense of self with us? And if so, what factors, both neurological and social, may underlie such an ability? So in this meeting, I know we're talking about research methods and research tools, and I'm going to focus on using the mirror, a very simple device, a relatively inexpensive device, at least when we talk about dolphins. When we get into elephants, we've had to pay a lot of money for big mirrors, the jumbo mirror. But I'm going to talk about mirrors as a research tool to explore self-awareness in other animals. So just to get us all on the same page, mirror self-recognition has been a rare ability. We used to think it was uniquely human, and it was confined until about 2001 to humans and great apes. So humans can do it. This is a colleague of mine who I did some work with, Franz Dubal. He's my token human. A common chimpanzee, the bonobos, have shown mirror self-recognition. We mentioned that before. Orangutans and the gorillas. And there are actually a few gorillas who have shown it. And again, so here we have the MSR club at that point with all the great apes. And interestingly, we have our flash point. If you notice the species above the line of the primates, it's only humans and the great apes that have been able to show this ability. Gibbons, old world, and new world monkeys have consistently failed to pass the mark test, and even show self-directed behavior. It's not even passing the mark test that we've heard about. They simply don't seem to show self-directed behavior. There was this one exception that you heard about from Eric, and I'll come back to that in a few moments. And then studies were done by Denny Povinelli and Irene Pepperberg, exposing elephants, Asian elephants, and an African gray parrot, and they showed that the animals seemed to use the mirror, but not in a self-directed way, in the sense of passing a mark test, but rather to find hidden food that they couldn't find in the absence of a mirror. That's called mirror-guided behavior, which is no simple feat. So again, there are questions of, you know, it's truly the limits of these animals, and I know Irene and I are interested in revisiting some of these questions with other birds and parrots. And what about the elephants? Was this really a full assessment of their ability? And again, we'll be talking about that again. So, but this idea of this line between the animals that show it and don't provoked the question that many have said, is there some cognitive gap? why is it that we have animals on one side and animals on the other side? Is it something in the brain structure, the organization of the brain, the size of the brain, the number of neurons, the social behavior of the animals? What is it that causes one group to do it and the others not to? And again, these studies have been going on in about for the past 40 years. This gap between us and the rest and the other animals really fostered what I call primate-centered theories of mere self-recognition. And again, we've heard some of our past speakers talk about often we think that these are abilities that we only share with our closest ancestors. So some of the ideas that were put forth was that the reason that only the great apes showed it was because they have sophisticated primate politics similar to ours in many ways, and that they share an evolutionary or behavioral ecology with us somehow. Another idea was that there was something in the brain structure, the size of the brain of the great apes, particularly the idea that the frontal lobes are involved in this processing, and that may indeed be true, but again, is this specifically primate? Gordon Gallup in 1970 and others have claimed that giving dolphins, giving mirrors to other species and seeing how they react to mirrors and passing what he calls the mark test really serves as an operational definition of self-awareness. And again, I just wanted to clarify that I think it's a kind of self-awareness. I wouldn't say it defines self-awareness in and of itself. So here's the basic approach. So the basic approach is you expose an animal to a mirror. And most of us observe what the animals do. I use videotapes and record their vocalizations and their behavior. What's really interesting is you generally see three stages emerge. And this seems to be holding up across all these different species, which is really interesting. So the first stage we call exploratory or social behavior. And I'll show you some videos of this in a few moments. Where the animals will come in front of a mirror, they'll try to look under the mirror, behind it, over it, touching them, they'll push on the mirror. And then this often gives way to or is preceded by social behavior where they react like they're looking at another of their own species and they may show aggression or fear or tentative behaviors towards the mirror. And that's again why it's so important to understand the behavioral repertoire of these animals as much as you can before you start. Then they show the second stage that we call contingency testing. And the easiest way I can explain this is with a video. Here's Groucho. And this is, we know, we can all identify this. If you walk into a pharmacy like Rite Aid or CVS and you see that monitor and you're not sure it's you and you kind of do these motions, and sometimes they can get pretty weird. You're trying to see if there's a one-to-one correspondence between what you do and what that person, the one in the monitor or the mirror is doing. And this is a critical time because the animals that don't show this don't seem to go on to show self-directed behavior. This seems to be where they get it. It seems to involve some proprioceptive knowledge and testing of one's behavior in front of a mirror. Once you see this, and again, if these are not clear demarcations between these stages, you'll generally see self-directed behaviors emerging fairly quickly. And these are behaviors that are, again, just as you would say, self-directed. Self-touching, looking in one's eye, opening one's mouth really wide, not in an aggressive way, but in a very slow, prolonged way. Putting your eyes right in front of a mirror. Is this popping because I'm too close to it? Sure. Let me stand away. Okay, everybody can hear me this way? That's better. Putting one's eye right against a mirror. A little bit like this?
Yeah.
Better? Okay. Putting one's eye in front of a mirror, looking at your genitals, things you can't normally see without a mirror. Certainly young kids do this. Once you start seeing self-directed behaviors, then the basic idea, and this is what Gordon Gallup had pioneered, was to mark the animal. Now, what he did originally was he lightly anesthetized the animals, put a mark above their brow ridge. This was done with chimpanzees and the great apes. Put a mark above their brow ridge, and he used a red, non-toxic mark that might have some biological significance. So when the animals saw it, it would look like blood, and maybe they would touch it. And later studies didn't involve anesthesia. The animals were just marked in other studies with primates and some of our work. Nevertheless, the issue is when the animal comes back to the mirror after they're marked, do they touch the mark? or do they touch the mirror? And Gallup had said if they touch themselves, then that's evidence that they've passed the mark. And of course you have to do baseline showing that they're touching themselves more here where they've been marked after the mark than prior to the mark, because if an animal's always touching themselves, that wouldn't tell us much. Again, the importance of controls. And the mark test has become, let me hold up on this for a minute. The mark test, you're going to get upstaged by that one. The mark test has become a litmus test with mirror self-recognition. So passing the mark test means showing mirror self-recognition. Now, I just want to point out, because I'm going to come back to this in a bit, that in the original work that Gallup did, he had said that the animals had demonstrated self-directed behaviors, and he felt that this was evidence in and of itself for mirror self-recognition. But the mark test was one more objective way to show this. So here's a little video. This was part of a nature show. Here's a rhesus macaque, a Japanese macaque, in front of a mirror showing social behavior. Social behavior, acting as though it was looking at another animal, finally leaves. Here's a chimpanzee, again, first exposed to a mirror, clearly not sure. But then you see this behavior is somewhat social looking, similar to the macaque, but you quickly see it giving way. And when I say quickly, in this case it's quick, it varies, the stages vary in duration. Here's much more tentative, this contingency testing, Groucho Marx looking behavior. Now more self-directed, tentative at first. We laugh because we identify so much. There's so much like us morphologically. Looking in one's eye, now we see things that we can really identify with. It really speaks for itself. And a little dental work needed here. And here's a simulation of the mark. Again, it was done with something that was darker red, but they just used calamine to show passing this mark. So that's what the basic test looks like. And and when we look at the kinds of behaviors we see, again, this is an example of self-directed behavior, grooming in front of the mirror, close eye viewing, bringing your eye right up, which you're not going to do with a stranger. Nose picking is big in primates, whether they're non-human or human children. Open mouth looking, I couldn't help myself on this slide. So this wide open mouth, sticking one's tongue out if you have hands examining the insides. And again, as I think Eric mentioned, often animals will look at their genitals, both human and non-human animals. Again, an area that kids are certainly curious about too. So I work with bottlenose dolphins, and I've been working with them for about 25 years now. And in my past work, and I'll just give you a little glimmer of some of the work that led me to think that these animals were really great candidates for tests of mirror self-recognition. I got a call from Gordon Gallup and his student at the time, Laurie Marino, and they said, would you like to work with us? We want to do it. I had a dolphin lab in California, and we did a first study, and then that showed what we felt was suggestive evidence for mirror self-recognition, but we were not convinced at that point. Even though the animals were showing some pretty compelling behaviors, they didn't really pass the mark test. And then several years later, my colleague Laurie Marino and I did a second study. So I'd like to talk to you about some of that today. But Gordon Gallup, in giving him full credit, was really the first to suggest that elephants and dolphins would be good candidates because they had large, complex brains, and they also showed empathy. And he suggested that perhaps empathy, theory of mind, mirror self-recognition, as I said before, had some links. So bottlenose dolphins, why are they compelling candidates? First, they do have large complex brains. So do elephants, by the way. And I found myself saying a lot of times now that I find myself studying large gray animals with large gray brains, coincidentally. So they've got these large complex brains. They show both social and behavioral complexity. They have complex societies that we call fission-fusion societies, which means they join and they form alliances with certain animals, and then they form alliances with other animals. And there's some recent work now showing that these complex social networks may even be more complex than chimp societies. There's some evidence for what we call third-order alliances, where you'll have two alliances coming together to form a much larger alliance, particularly when they're faced with larger groups or more challenges in their environment. They also show a strong proclivity for both vocal and behavioral mimicry. They are social learners, and they're one of the few species that are also vocal learners. Now, that may not mean much right now in terms of mere self-recognition, but again, I'll talk to you a little bit about some of the things we've seen with vocal learning that may suggest intelligence of a different level. They're highly cooperative, they're interdependent. As I said, they show empathic behavior, and they have, again, many comparable cognitive abilities with the great apes. So dolphins, again, when we think about these large complex brains, our brains weigh about 1,300 grams, a dolphin brain weighs in at about 1,700 grams, And they're organized differently. We haven't been able to discern something that we would call the frontal lobes in dolphins. It may be distributed more throughout the brain. So for this very reason, again, they have two hemispheres, but this is just a differently organized brain, which makes them a really interesting subject to study, a really interesting species to study when we look at cognitive abilities. And this is a slide from my colleague, Lori Marino, who does study dolphin brains and does allometrics on the brain. The dolphin brain is second only to modern human brains in the measure of relative size. And the whole relative brain body size is called the encephalization quotient. There's a lot of discussion about what this really means. And it's just one measure. We can't put too much stock in this yet, but it is one way of thinking about the relative size of a brain to a body. Others, and if you just look at this this chart, we see that human brains are about seven times the size they need to be to run a body of our size. If we look at the great apes, the chimpanzees, they're about 2.3 times the size, gorillas 1.6, orangs 1.8, dolphins in blue are closer to us than any of the great apes in relative size. But there's other work that I'm probably not going to be able to have time to get into by colleagues who are actually looking at the size of the neurons, the organization. Just to mention, dolphin, whales, and elephants have bigger neurons than primates and many other animals. And it may be a very different wiring strategy and strategy for a brain. So if we have time, maybe we can talk about some of that. So I think numbers of neurons, organization also probably plays a role. And again, we don't have the answers at this point. But brains can only tell us so much in the end. Again, if we look at the social and behavioral complexity of these animals, they do really rival chimpanzee societies. Youngsters stay with their parents until they're about 3 or 4 years old, and then go off and start forming their own social groups that come back to the maternal group. They have long-lasting relationships, and again, in this kind of social network, they don't have cell phones, but they have complex vocalizations that can keep them connected out in the seas. And that's, again, another area of work that I'm looking at, is the vocal communication of these animals. I'm just going to skip a few of these. But they also, interestingly, like chimpanzees that have learned sign languages or worked with computer keyboards like Kanzi, have shown the ability to both comprehend and produce symbolic forms of communication, particularly gestural communication. At Lou Herman's lab, he's done elegant experiments that have shown that you can give dolphins a sequence of gestures and that they can comprehend even novel sentences. That he calls them novel sentences. And I've done some work at my lab that I'll talk about in just a moment, where we've given them underwater keyboards and they've gone far beyond what we expected to find. Now, real quickly, dolphins are non-handed, but they're manipulative. Again, sometimes we're very biased in thinking you have to have hands to be manipulative. And many years ago, my students and I published some work showing that dolphins could create their own objects of play. Many of you may have seen some of these. They got kind of popular on YouTube. Here they're blowing beautiful rings of air, these bubble rings. And I think we were the first to report these in an aquarium. And here's a dolphin blowing one ring. This is Shiloh. And she follows the ring up and blows a second ring. And then when it meets with the first ring, it forms a hoop and she swims through it. This was really beautiful, creative behavior, and the first evidence we had that a non-human would actually create their own object from something they were producing. Play is rampant. Mark's going to probably mention this because he's done so much work in this area. Play is rampant in the animal world, but an animal creating their own objects of play, wow. Dolphins are always also highly vocal, and we're trying to find the Rosetta Stone, and most of my work has been trying to crack the code, and right now that's a whole area of my work that I'm not going to have time to talk to with you about today, but it's fascinating. How are they communicating, these big brains, out in the seas? But one of the things I did to try to figure this out was I gave them an underwater keyboard, and this was done with the help of lots of people at Hewlett-Packard and other organizations. And we did, this was, again, I was inspired by some of the work that had been done by Sue Savage and her colleagues. So we designed an underwater keyboard, and it asked the question, what will these big brains do if we give them choice and control? Very different way of working with animals. They were fed. I wanted to work with them as though they were intelligent other beings. So we fed them, they had toys all the time, and then for 30 minutes in the morning we just removed the toys, gave them 30 minutes of a keyboard and recorded everything, both video and audio. And it was a nice way in to study what they might do with this keyboard, because there were acoustic signals that they could get if they hit these different keys. So it helped me look at vocal learning and vocal imitation, something we knew they were highly mimetic, but we didn't know how they learned their vocal signals. So real briefly, and I'm just going to buzz through this, just because it gives you a flavor for why I thought they were really cool candidates for a study. So if they hit a key, and these keys would be positioned in any of the 9 positions on the keyboard, and it was a whole pseudo-random program. If they hit a key, they heard a whistle that was generated by the computer. I've gotten really good at this. And then they hit a key, they hear, and they get a ball. They hit an H, they hear, and get a rub. Giant dolphin vending machine. They were in control, we were the slaves. And we could stimulate them to use it because we were there, but we couldn't cue them because there was no right and wrong answer. And we worked with animals that were 11 months old. We had studied their own development up to that point, and then, so we knew their history, and we tracked their behavior. And again, this is a whole other talk, but the highlight of this is, here's me and Delphi, one of the dolphins we worked with, and the keyboard is right here. And he's hit for ring, so I hand him a ring. And he, when he gets it, he hears that whistle. Now the whistles were different than their own whistles in the frequency modulation, but within the frequency and time domain of their own signals, so they could produce them. And in fact, they did. And they showed rapid vocal imitation. They started imitating after they've heard the ball whistle 19 times. Another signal was produced after 9 exposures, another after 2, and the rest after they heard them once. And they showed great fidelity in how they did these vocalizations. And we were not responding differently because we didn't know they were doing it until we went in and analyzed the signals. Beyond that, they learned on their own associations between the visual forms, the sounds, and the objects they were getting. And we started having evidence for this in their behavior. Again, this was without training. They showed the spontaneous imitation and spontaneous learning. So it was quite quick and quite remarkable. And again, this and some other work we did made me think that these animals would be indeed good animals for tests of mere self-recognition. Basically, what we tried to do is work as similarly as Gordon Gallup had done with chimps, using similar techniques. But we needed a functionally similar mark test, but we had what we called the no hands problem. They couldn't touch the mark. So instead of just marking the dolphins once, we decided what we would do instead was to mark them many times on different parts of their bodies once they showed self-directed behavior. Remember I said we don't mark them until they show evidence they've been exposed. We look for evidence of contingency testing, then self-directed behavior, then we go for the mark. And what we found was if we marked them on different parts of their body that they couldn't see without the mirror, we thought, well, if they race to the mirror and position their body, the marked portion of their body right away, that would be good evidence in our book for this. So we did multiple marks with multiple animals. And we used both control sessions where we used reflective and non-reflective surfaces to see if their behavior changed. And the dolphins we worked with were two wonderful bottlenose dolphins, Presley and Tab. They were both captive born. They were 13 and 17-year-old males. And we worked in two different pools. I'm going to skip some of these details. We initially exposed them in one pool. And these animals had mirror exposure because when I started this study, they were in glass pools and they had reflective surfaces. So I had actually seen behavior that I thought looked very self-directed. And I didn't expect to see social behavior. They were not naive to mirrors. But what we did predict was that they would show mirror self-recognition once exposed, and then if we marked them, we had one mirror placed in one end of a pool, and we marked them at the other end, and the idea was that if they indeed understood that they were marked and were motivated to look, they would make a beeline to the mirror at the other end of the pool. This is Presley, and this is the mark, and I used a non-toxic black marker, and I tested it on my own tongue. I'm not going to mark them in any way that I wouldn't do myself. This is for kids, like for kids' markers, so kids can eat these things. And we marked them on different parts of their body, ventrally, and on different parts of the body they couldn't see, and looked for differential behavior for them to position in different ways as soon as they were marked. And Lori and I made three different predictions, and we agreed that if any of the predictions didn't hold up, we wouldn't conclude that they showed mirror self-recognition, because we knew we were going to be, you know, held out to dry, because there had been so much literature suggesting that we wouldn't see it with dolphins. First, we said if the dolphins really knew it was themselves, they would not show any social behaviors at the reflective surface. That prediction was in fact confirmed. Neither dolphin showed social behavior. Again, they had had experience with mirrors, so it wasn't a surprise. Second prediction, the dolphins would spend more time at the mirror when they were marked than under any other condition when they weren't marked. And we also, I forgot to tell you something, we did something as a control called a sham mark. Before we marked them with a pretend mark. We simply handled it and pretended we were marking them with water markers. Same marker, but with water. They didn't race to the mirror. They had never seen a mark. But normally the dolphins would go to the mirror anyway because they were interested, but they didn't race there after we marked them. After we marked them and they were responding to the mark, then we did what we called a late sham. Now their knowledge theoretically had changed because now they knew they could be marked. When we did the late sham, they raced over to the mirror. They didn't seem to differentiate between being marked and non-marked. So here we have the dolphins in a situation with an early sham, not spending very much time at the mirror, and certainly not racing to the mirror, significantly higher amounts of time when they were marked at the mirror. And then the late sham shows this change in knowledge state. They would race to the mirror, search for the mark for a bit, but they didn't spend as much time there. Our third prediction was that the dolphins would, this is a motivational issue, when they were marked, as opposed to when they weren't marked, they would race to the mirror. The latency between when we released them from being marked would be shorter because they wanted to get to the mirror fast. So we're trying to deal with this motivational issue. And importantly, that the first behavior they show when they get to the mirror is indeed them orienting the mark. Because it wouldn't be a very compelling argument to me if a dolphin got to a mirror when they were marked and just kind of started spinning around and they just happened to see the mark, because that mark could just get their attention. And you can make arguments that they didn't understand it was self. But if they actually get there right away and put that mark right in the mirror, I think it's much more compelling. And again, this was a risky prediction because if the dolphins could recognize themselves in the mirror, but just weren't interested, they weren't motivated, we wouldn't have outward or behavioral evidence to support that behavior, that ability. So first, they were both confirmed. The latencies to the mark when they were marked were much shorter than, were significantly shorter than when they were not marked. So in other words, they were more quickly going to the mirror when they were marked. And secondly, their initial orientations in most cases were to the mark area. And I'll show you some videos of that in a moment. So here's a video. And what we're going to see first is there's a mirror, a very thin strip where these white lines are on the outside of their wall. They're bringing their toys over at this point. Here's this close viewing of a dolphin holding its eye right up to the mirror. And this is pretty typical. We're filming from outside the pool off to the side. And this is slowed down so you can see it. Here's the contingency testing type of behavior. May also be self-directed at this point, but it's very hard to tell. But this is not normal behavior for a dolphin. They simply just don't do these kinds of things. Then at this point, we started marking them once we saw contingency testing and self-directed. And now you're going to see the dolphin coming over to this mirror. This is Presley. He's back at the mirror where those two strips are. Right in front of this little narrow strip that's about 13 inches wide, he's marked on his head, takes a breath, comes back down, and is right at the mirror looking. And I'll show you some differential behavior too. This is an animal that's interested in looking at self. here's a missing mark. This is a sham mark. He knows he's been marked already, and we marked him under his pec fin. We move the mirror, and he goes to the place of the mirror right away, and he's doing these consecutive flips. He's crammed at a corner, and he's on a search for this missing mark. This is not normal behavior. And a very motivated animal. They can wipe this off right away, by the way. It comes right off, because we didn't want to distress them at all. This is an outside pool where I showed you the diagram. We marked them down at this end, the mirror's at this end. So now you'll see, for the first time, we marked Presley between his pectoral fins, under his chin, and he's being marked here, and the trainers are gonna leave in the opposite direction so that'll bring him down this way. This animal's not marked, Presley's marked, Tab is not. Presley's been released, and before I can focus my camera, he's at the mirror. Now you'll see him, he's not showing the same behaviors you saw before. Now he's stretching up his neck, and he's lifting his neck, and you'll see it in a moment when the water clears even more clearly. The timeline, I'm gonna cut to save time, it's 10:38. He's still at the mirror, the other dolphin is not. Yet when we mark the other dolphin, shows the same kinds of behaviors. Now just watch, he's at the mirror, it's 10:38, he's stretching his neck, Presley comes in, 10:43, he's still there. Now you can see it through the water, it's much calmer. See him bringing his neck up? Tab is just watching. Presley, and now you'll see something quite interesting. If you want to see more of your body in a mirror, what do you need to do? You need to back away. Now you're going to see Presley move away from the mirror. This is not trained behavior. What you're going to see next is not a normal behavior, nor has it been trained. You're going to see him swirling in front of the mirror. Now watch what goes on. This reminds me of a dancer spotting. He's swirling. And he looks. He's swirling. And he looks in the mirror and swirls. And you can see his reflection in the mirror and swirls. And he does this repeatedly. Looks again and swirls. Looks again. He's self-monitoring. If you let them, they will show you what they're capable of. I think part of this is getting out of their way, not overtraining animals. Okay. So in conclusion of this segment of the study, we've showed that two dolphins used mirrors to investigate marked parts of their body. Both Presley and Tab showed this. They passed the mark test. They showed those stages that I talked about. They showed strikingly similar behaviors. And these stages of behaviors and specific behaviors that have been described in many of the great apes, which is really interesting, given these striking morphological differences and differences in even brain structure. And these findings were the first to suggest that in non-primate species, the bottlenose dolphin was also capable of mirror self-recognition, so we added the dolphin to the mirror self-recognition club. And what's interesting is that these past theories of that suggested that specific primate characteristics were responsible for mirror self-recognition simply did not apply. So specific social factors, that like primate politics, it may be that you have to have a socially sophisticated species, but it doesn't have to be primate. Dolphins, as I said, are socially complex. In terms of having a shared evolutionary history with us, as an explanatory principle, dolphins and humans have been separated for over 95 million years. So quite divergent, no real shared evolutionary history. That couldn't be one of the reasons. In terms of specific neurobiological features like the frontal lobe, well, dolphins may have something analogous to frontal lobes, and that's a fascinating area, but it doesn't have to be a frontal lobe as we know it in the primate world. So here we have two species separated by tens of millions of years of independent evolution from radically different environments, different kinds of brain organization, showing this very same cognitive ability that Laurie Marino and I had suggested that this is a beautiful case of cognitive convergence in this ability. So several years later, Laurie and I published this paper in 2001, okay. And several years later, we did a study with Asian elephants. My colleague Franz Zuval and I and his student Josh Plotnick at Emory University thought that, again, let's test this with elephants. And very similar, as you can see, list of attributes that we find with dolphins. They are very separated from primates and dolphins as well, if you look at this cladistic. And I'm just going to give you a big, large brains. Their EQs are about 1.8 to 2.3, similar to chimps, and they have large, complex brains as well. We worked with three elephants at the Bronx Zoo. We changed our methods. We sham marked with a clear, an invisible mark. We automated the same substance and marked them on the other side of their heads with a white mark. And we worked with three adults that were 34 to 35 years old and built this jumbo mirror. It has to be jumbo for elephants. And we tested two elephants at a time who were buddies. We didn't want to separate them from normal, their normal social environment. And like chimps, once they sort of got familiar with the mirror, they started bringing their food over to eat in front of the mirror. Here's just a little view of what they're doing. This is the first day out in front of the mirror. We did baseline and controls. I'm not going to have time to go into all the details here, but they very quietly approached. We recorded all their infrasound because we can't hear all the sounds they make. So we used special microphones to see, were they rumbling below our threshold, but they were not. And they were so interested in this mirror, they came up really close. They have really good visual acuity, right at trunk's length. And here, this is Maxine and Patty. And what we basically found was they were so motivated, they did a lot of trunk sniffing over the wall in the beginning. This is called exploratory behavior. And actually lifted themselves up to look over the wall. This is tons of elephant motivation. You can see she's up on her back legs. They got down, they both did it, they got down on their front legs. Here is one, this is Maxine actually bending down to look under the mirror. This is an elephant. They look tiny, they look like little gerbils here, but these are huge Asian elephants. She's getting down on her front legs. Normally these elephants are out in this exercise yard eating hay and doing nothing until they get on their normal yard. But she's lifting up her little foot there. So I'm going to skip ahead here. Here's the final test. We did the mark test. She's marked with an invisible mark on this side and a mark on this side. We had a control for olfactory cues. And when she came out in front of the mirror, she started touching only the marked area. That side of her head. She oriented that side of her head. She's looked at both sides, but only touched the one side. And interestingly, only this animal, and this is Happy, passed the mark test. And here she's going to hold some dirt up to the mark. And she touched much more often than in any of the other sessions combined. So we were able to conclude that at least one Asian elephant passed the mark test. Now this brings up this whole issue, and I'm just going to finish up by talking about this. Well, what about the animals that seem to show self-directed behavior? All three elephants showed very strong evidence for self-directed behavior. Yet only one elephant passed the mark test. And as I mentioned before, many of the primates, many of the chimps, don't pass the mark test, yet show self-directed behavior. We're working on a paper at my lab right now suggesting that the mark test misses the mark. And I think what's happening is that we're throwing out the behavioral evidence for self-directed behavior and only looking at whether animals pass the mark test. I think we have to go back and look at behavior because I think we're going to see a richness there. I think the mark test is wonderful when it works. I'm not suggesting we don't use it, but I think when an animal doesn't pass the mark, we have to look for other evidence in their behavior themselves. I just want to skip ahead on one thing. So right now we're doing developmental and age-related work at the National Aquarium with dolphins. Here is one dolphin that's five, and I'll just show you some of the behavior. We're going to be looking at two infants born in the next month, and they're going to be exposed to mirrors. This is very self-directed. They're going to be exposed to mirrors from birth, so we'll be able to track the emergence of mirror self-directed behavior with other behavioral and cognitive milestones. But interestingly, we have, here's an adult, 34-year-old adult female, and she's looking in her mouth. Very similar to what we see with chimps. We have adults in their 30s, in their 20s, showing mirror self-directed behaviors now. One has passed the mark test. We haven't tested the others yet. So at least in dolphins, adults are showing this and showing interest. And it's a very interesting issue indeed. She's right up against the mirror. And they're silent when they show this behavior. Okay, one last. Here is a young animal that's sham marked between his pecs, just like we did. This is an unusual position, and you'll see him pressing his body against the mirror. They can see best when they're like this. They look downward. And he's looking, we think, for this missing mark. He's actually passed the test at a very young age. This is the sham right now. And finally, here's an animal that is looking at his genitals. I just thought everybody would enjoy this in closing. Well, actually, I don't have that included. I'm going to skip that one. And I think we've talked about some of these other tests, so I'll skip the crow, the magpie, and the issue about monkeys, since it's much. And everybody wanted to see the looking at genitals, but we'll skip that. And I think I'll hold here. So I just want to close in saying that I think the mirror is really an effective tool for trying to understand the minds of other animals. I think if we really give animals more choice and control and things that will enrich their lives, and I indeed think the mirror is a huge enrichment device that we'll learn a great deal. But again, I think that right now it still remains unclear what are the factors and mechanisms that contribute to species exhibiting mirror self-recognition. Thanks.